It is time for Tacky Talk. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us for our weekly podcast. How are you, Tacky?
Doing not bad, Joe. Good to see you again on another week. We have a bright and sunny day, and the weather continues to play tricks with us.
Boy, it's one extreme to the other. We go from the Arctic tundra to almost sunny Florida here.
Well, what we call it, the fall springs, it's coming up. So some of you may see those little moths that occasionally appear in warm weather, thinking that it's warmer than it really is. It's Mother Nature is now playing with all of nature. And I don't know some of you, but I've been hearing the Canadian geese come back a bit early, which I'm a little surprised by, to be honest with you. They were out in the marsh in front of my house hanging out. And I'm like, aren't you guys like a month early?
Oh, maybe a harbinger of good things to come. Let's hope.
Perhaps. Canadian geese are not one of my favorite birds. I think most have experienced that. You know why. It's been strange, needless to say. But, you know, we're still here. We're still kicking and happy to have another conversation with you in a new week in February. Yeah.
Likewise. And there have been some changes, certainly over the past week. I guess one of the biggest ones is we have a date for the opening of the State House.
Yeah, the House and Senate have agreed to open the State House to the public on February 22nd, which is the day after President's Day next week. The State House has been closed to the public, sort of. I think there's been not the greatest communication on this, because if it was closed to the State House completely, none of the reporting or press conferences would have been able to happen in the State House, right? I mean, so what we've been doing over the past almost 2 years now is that staff and legislators are allowed to enter the State House. There is contact tracing because you have to alert people that you showed up just in case. We have had multiple situations of people infected since April 2020 come into the State House and caused, obviously, enormous contact tracing among the staff and janitorial crew and support staff, administrators, IT people, and so forth. So, you know, obviously, there are people working in the State House, and whenever someone becomes infected or there's infection walk into the place, you know, massive contact tracing occurs. You can come to the State House with appointment. We have allowed that in the past prior to the coming Tuesday. So if you really needed to visit someone, arrangements can be made through security to allow you through. So what is different now is that now you can come into the building in the public without a prior appointment. And to do so, you need to demonstrate that you have a vaccination card status and you, or you can have, vaccination card or you do a COVID test 24 hours prior to arrival. So the security will still be operated by the DCR Rangers. And I've been informed that the House and Senate court officers will be screening people coming into the State House as additional security. And there's obviously heightened security with the state police given the security breach last week. So it's been two things going on at once. We're setting a process for people to be screened for their vaccinations. And secondly, we have now heightened security because of that security breach. So, we'll see how it works for folks. But I always remind people that once you enter the State House, you can hang out all day. Think of it as being in the Boston Common, but indoors. And that's the difference between this and every public building in the Commonwealth. No building in the Commonwealth lets you sit in the reception area all afternoon. We also have a library. The State House Library is very popular with the public. People come in and read books and use the periodicals and access our computer systems and archives. Very popular. And then people like to just wander the halls, pop in and out of offices. The only exceptions is public hearings. When a public hearing ends, we generally will lock the doors to the hearing rooms and, you know, the public leaves the hearing room. But it doesn't mean you can't, you know, hang out in Great Hall for the rest of the day. You can hang out at the cafeteria upstairs the rest of the day. I've seen it happen before. This is kind of the difference that, you know, no public building does. I mean, it's like City Hall in Quincy. You can't sit in the mayor's office all day long. You can't sit at DPW all day long. You know, people tend to forget that about the State House because, you know, I do recognize the so-called frequent flyers, right? They're always there all the time.
Yeah. Do you know the particulars, Tacky, of like what would be considered fully vaccinated? And as far as the test, can it be a home test? Does it have to be a PCR test?
Welcome to a little bit of vagueness going on in the instructions being given.
Okay.
Demonstration of full vaccination is, again, two-dose vaccination. It's still perceived as the full vaccination out there. testing is a big question mark because the PCR test takes up to 2 days minimum to get a return. Rapid tests, of course, you can generate in a short time, but you don't get the same type of documentation. I'll be honest with you, we're a little vague on this one.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
I'm a little vague on this, on how that would work. I think what we'll do is definitely encourage folks to get their vaccination cards. We know the state is 77% and climbing on two-dose vaccination. We're well into 95% one-dose vaccination. Obviously, accommodations would have to be made for children at 5 and below, given the current vaccination status issue. I do believe that we'll be reasonable about, you know, children 5 and below. And realistically speaking, there won't be any school tours at the state house to at least, you know, the summertime. So, you know, it's not like kids are going to the state house right now, right? You should be in school, I hope.
Right. Well, it's vacation week next week, but yeah, generally.
Generally, yes. Hopefully the kids are in school. And school tours, like I said, are generally in the summertime. So starting in late May to July, we get a lot of the kids coming in for tours. But the other real question is whether or not we hold events back in the state house. That is an unanswered question because people utilize Great Hall, Nurses Hall, the Grand Staircase for public events where you crowd, you know, hundreds of people, you know, shoulder to shoulder for various types of rallies or advocacy days or public awareness days or education briefings for legislators and staff, celebrations for historical moments. So I'm not clear if we're going to do that yet, because I've had inquiries about whether that would be having public events and reserve rooms for that. And I'm don't think we're going to do that just yet.
Okay. All right. And regardless, masks will be required for everyone, right?
Yeah, masks are required for everyone. To my knowledge, because I've been in the office a bit more during this, you know, March. I was in the state house in December, January and February on and off to get my mail and look at the offices. They put some screens up, those plastic barriers for the reception area up front. But again, people don't ignore the reception area if no one's there and just walk into my office. Yeah. I've had that happen more than once in my life now. Yeah. But there is appear to be no screens around my staff's desk at the moment in case people in public walk on in.
Okay. Yeah. So it's going to be a learning process, you know, getting back into it. Will all the legislators be back?
Emergency rules still do apply. We are still allowed to operate remotely for formal sessions. The staff has worked out a schedule. The intention is not to have all staff be there at the same time in my situation. I do have 5 staffers. If there is one that gets COVID and you're sitting 2 feet from them all day long, the odds are pretty good. Even if you're vaccinated, there's a possibility you may be an asymptomatic carrier minimum. So we have decided to operate on a rotating staff basis, and we are required to do our own contact tracing in each office. So if you want to make an appointment to visit me or you randomly walk in, you need to fill out a contact tracing form.
Which is simply name, address, phone number?
Yep. Basically, we got to find you in case, you know, we find out that one of us got something and you're with us long enough that you have a probability of getting infected. Like I said, it doesn't matter your vaccination status. We will want to alert you in the case of a situation. And if somehow, God forbid, my staff gets infected, we're in quarantine mode. Mm-hmm. I will close my office and we'll go to quarantine and remain in remote. I mean, if you all think that I'm going to be stupid enough to allow infected people sitting around waiting to infect you, I mean, no. I mean, I hope you all think I have at least some common sense not to do that to everybody.
Right. It's all about protecting each other, you know, as well as ourselves. And it has been, you know, throughout the life of this pandemic.
Oh, no, I'm aware. And you've probably heard stories of folks in this city running around fully infected and proceeded to just hang out with folks, not telling them what's going on. I've heard it happen in doctor's offices already, other medical people. I've heard that happen in restaurants and bars throughout the reopening process. And people find out after the fact that this person was infected, hanging around drinking next to them for the last, you know, 3 hours. You can imagine the unpleasantness that happens regarding the contact tracing and further infections in the room. Not everyone's fully responsible. They're under some impression that, it's okay. I'm like, no, it's not okay.
Right. And that's the reason for mandates in the first place.
Yeah. And I've had a few friends I was supposed to catch up with on business We're going to meet someplace outside in Quincy and have a cup of tea, depending on the weather circumstances, and catch up on work issues. And, you know, this is how I've been operating, you know, whether in this format or, you know, 6 feet away from me outdoor someplace. I've had mm-hmm. meetings in my own yard, for Pete's sakes. I mean, business continued at the State House despite the situation at the State House access. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a thing that's underappreciated by the media. I think my constituency and the public does have some appreciation of the work my office put in. I don't think the media has appreciation because they didn't have to let the media into the State House. They could have had press conferences, any number of other places. So, you know, obviously there was a mechanism for the State House reporters to be there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Do you think the protest last week has anything to do with this policy change?
No, we received a notification at the beginning of January that we're going to move to a phased opening. Okay. So we've already been alerted that we had to submit to Human Resources some type of staffing, staffing schedule. Mm-hmm. So my chief of staff and me, we had a chat, and then, you know, we talked to the other staff, and, you know, obviously we know everybody's family statuses and what's going at home with them. So we could try to figure out, you know, how to reduce exposure as much as possible while everyone is at the back of the office and the back of the office some level. The idea is that we will see how this goes. And as we progress forward, we'll adjust how we just keep adjusting.
Right. Yeah. But pivoting, as they say, right?
Actually pivoting. And like I said, there's an infection and there's more than one person off at the same time during that scheduling day, you know, you're going to quarantine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The indicators are good. I just looked at the wastewater data this morning, actually, and it is at its lowest point almost since last summer. So that's a great indicator. It has been pretty much throughout the pandemic.
Yeah, it's, again, the disease here is it's got to continue to have a chain of infection. Once it runs out of chain of infection to get, whether it be from vaccination or just keeping away from people, it will start to go down. Last time we had a massive drop off was because of vaccinations. It really did stop the spread. And then Delta, frankly, was on the decline. And then we had Omicron make an appearance right. As it was in its decline, because again, it ran out of people to infect as we continue vaccinations and quarantining ourselves if you happen to be infected. But this year's been unusually different for Omicron because according to ABC News, I watched last night, children had been four times more infected, five below unvaccinated than Delta. And the myth is now truly a myth about young children having greater resistance level and less likely infections of COVID-19, which seemed to be true on COVID original version.
Yes.
Alpha seemed to be that true. Delta seemed to break that myth, but Omicron most definitely has broken the myth that children have a naturally higher resistance. That is not true now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, viruses don't know borders either. I know that South Korea is struggling right now with a surge. Other parts of the world are still struggling with Omicron surge. So it's going to be a global vaccination, effort before it's endemic, I think.
Agreed. And again, I remind folks that not all people have the same resources that we have in the U.S. You know, we have a high choice of vaccination. We manufacture a lot. We have more distribution capacity, whether it be in-person brick and mortar or mobile ability in the rural parts of the U.S. We can get the vaccine to you some way, somehow. I mean, we are the most advanced country. Now, whether people choose to take advantage of the ability of our largeness and technological advancements and wealth is not my call. It's your call on how you want to take advantage of that. But I mean, you know, you cannot say at all that the United States does not have the financial technological know-how to get you vaccinated. We will get you vaccinated. Right. Other countries cannot boast this, nor do they have the purchasing power, nor the infrastructure capacity to manage it. So I know that, you know, early on we had didn't have a lot going in 2021 where we started vaccinations because of supply chain issues, and you got to get it ramped up and everyone's getting themselves prepared for massive vaccinations. But now that we've been in this process for a full year, it does run fairly smoothly overall. Accommodations are made regardless. I know when there's a massive, it's like a Christmas rush, right? When a lot of people come at the same time, but it's not from the lack of vaccine. We do have the capacity to do that. So, you know, I again say over and over again, I know we're very fortunate and blessed to live in this country. By far none. And COVID has definitely proven that to me.
And cost is not an inhibitive factor at all anywhere in the United States. That's incredible.
That is incredible. Not all countries have the capacity to do that. They're heavily related on donations from rich first world countries, including ourselves. And even in countries that could buy vaccine because they're top 10 economy, had trouble accessing supply chain. Again, Canada is a top 10 modernized country, had a long wait to get their access to vaccine because countries like ours and the EU, were able to gobble them up sooner than they could. But South Korea had to wait. I remember they had to get a donation from Poland. I mean, really, Australia had a long wait. But now there is a surge out everywhere as Omicron waves move through. And I've been checking in Hong Kong, and if they can't contain the surge, I mean, they're looking at 20,000 person infections a day. It's an island that is smaller than Greater Boston. Well, not small, but about the same size as the Greater Boston area, Boston plus the burbs, transportation map. There's a thing called Greater Boston.
Yep.
And it's about 7.2 million people. So it's slightly bigger than Massachusetts. So, right now they've moved to draconian level lockdowns and they've emptied the public hospitals. If you do not have a need to be overnight in the hospital, you are basically told to go home now. Wow. They're preparing, and they also have set up a infection quarantine dorm. And the island is now trying to recruit hotels because obviously nobody's visiting the island. Recruit all the hotels to be quarantine centers as well. So, the island is in serious, serious problems here. And they do have a good vaccination rate, but they do have the Chinese vaccine, which is proven to be not as nearly as effective in stopping the spread.
Yeah.
So, on top of the Moderna, the J&J, and the AstraZeneca, and the Pfizer, they have everything over there. But, not all vaccines were discovered to create equal. And, they're moving to draconian lockdowns. I mean, they shot down the bars, the nightclubs, all the saunas, all the shopping plazas that are limited capacity, they're closing larger restaurants and smaller restaurants. I mean, they're moving into it. And they'll lock down whole apartment complexes, require mandatory testing as soon as they find one infection. So, they're going to cross the 20,000 person day barrier probably at the end of the month. And when you think about the spread with 20,000 a day, you got 7.5 million people in a very small contained space. It's going to move like wildfire.
Yeah. So it's not over yet for some people, for sure. That's no question. Can we switch gears a little bit, Tacky? You mentioned transportation. I know you were at the groundbreaking earlier this week, the new MBTA bus maintenance facility here in Quincy.
Yeah, this is very exciting for all of us. We've been having public meetings in this matter since pre-COVID, actually. I remember the first meeting we had at the Southwest Middle School on this issue with the MBTA. And those of you know on Hancock Street, been staring at that same maintenance garage since I was a child. And I'm sure that it's much, much older than I am.
No, it's over 100 years old, actually. Yeah.
It's your geographic location is against the marsh, and it's not desirable over the course of a century. It cannot accommodate the large buses of the modern era. It still uses old diesel buses that are outlived their lifespan by 20 odd years. And obviously, people have driven down Hancock Street, getting in and out with buses is unpleasant as a driver, as they kind of pop out and you got to do the adjustment as to try to get in and out of that location. And if someone parks the car illegally in one of the corners near the bus depot, it becomes like an interesting 3-point turn situation, holding up the rest of us in traffic. And obviously, if you live near the area, you got the diesel fumes coming out. So. Yeah. For residents in that geographical location, this is great. The old Lowe's location, obviously they have the fence barrier up, and the residents have been living with a degree of traffic associated with that. In some ways, this would be less difficult because you don't have that constant stream of traffic moving through. Mm-hmm. It is going to be a garage. It would be inside a contained building. And the hope is that in the near future, we're able to get electric buses, which means that you will not have diesel buses. The noise level will be significantly lower with electric buses. And then we can have a more green public transit system in Quincy and the surrounding area. Quincy is a hub bus area. I think people sometimes forget that. It services places like Randolph, Weymouth, and Braintree. Mm-hmm. It does go into places like Mattapan. So, I mean, we're a hub. We are a hub area. So this is actually very exciting to put this together. On this new bus garage. I remember my old days working for Morrissey when they started putting hybrid buses out. We couldn't get in Quincy because simply they couldn't fit in the garage.
Oh, okay.
That literally was the reason. And there was a lot of disappointment because, you know, me among many other people were like, oh, we can get rid of these old diesel, black, smoky, spewing things for these hybrids, which, you know, it's, you know, back then, 20 years ago, that was, you know, a step in the right direction.
Yep.
We couldn't get those.
So here we are, thanks to the, as Senator Warren said, the federal dollars, otherwise it probably wouldn't happen.
Yeah, we are very excited. Massachusetts getting $9.5 billion in federal transportation money. The state has to match that money, whether it be about 10 or 20% to access those funds, which is not a bad split, folks, when you think about it. So we're going to
offer a lot of money, though.
A lot of money, but we'll author a transportation bond bill, you know, of probably like a billion eight.
Yeah,
probably 2 billion in the end. basically do the match. So you got like, you know, 9.5 billion, you know, times two, take off a decimal point. So, you know, we'll be able to do that. So right now it's about 1.2 for environmental infrastructure, which actually is very important. Obviously, for Quincy, I'll be advocating again for dredge money in the transportation component. It is about 2.2-ish billion or so for public transit, and the remainder is well over $5 billion of road and bridge money. This will greatly accelerate a lot of the existing projects and help break ground on projects that have been sitting in the planning phase and all permitted and ready to go. And we have about 5 or so years to utilize the distribution. So this also helped the economy locally. Infrastructure projects always help the economy, has a massive ripple effect. And I know unemployment rate is under 4% in Massachusetts. I haven't seen the January numbers yet, but in December it was under 4%. So the economy is running strong despite inflation, which is torturing all of us, I know. But there'll be jobs, and there'll be a spill-off effect associated with these construction projects.
Yeah, restaurants will benefit. Mom and pop stores, I'm sure, will benefit. As you say, construction workers. And, you know, who knows what other cottage industries might pop up around it.
Absolutely. And given the fact hospitality is still on recovery, it's recovered immensely compared. Everything recovered immensely compared to 2020, spring and summer. But we still need to continue this. And, it also fends off a future recession. One of the reasons that we managed some recession as well was actually the Big Dig project.
Mm.
Continuation of a massive government funded project, you know, help starve off a major recession.
Yeah.
So as I kind of like alluded to, you know, in the past, you know, 2020 was prime for a recessionary period, if not for the fact COVID hit. So the economic cycle is now completely a mess in terms of how we expect things. You know, recessions occur 10 to 12 years on average.
Right.
So now with this infrastructure money, we're going to be able to kind of push that out unless something, I don't know what will happen. But construction has been proven to one of those things that have been going on throughout COVID period, regardless of the lockdown.
That's true. Yep. We talk a little bit about an issue that I know comes under the purview of your committee regarding the gyms, the memberships. I know the AG's office just announced a settlement with Boston Sports Club, and I know you've got some legislation surrounding that to prevent any kind of issues from happening again.
Yeah, some may have been victimized by the Boston Sports Club. When the first shutdown occurred, it was still collecting your membership dues automatically, regardless of the fact they were open or not. They subsequently filed for bankruptcy later on in the year. And there was a huge issue about the fact they continued to kind of keep taking your money despite all that. AG intervened and proceeded to basically class action suit them on behalf of consumers under Chapter 93G, I think is the AG's power on consumer protection. I'm trying to remember the letter. But regardless, you know, she initiated her powers and worked out a settlement. Meanwhile, we've been working with the AG's office on a gym membership bill give more clarity regarding cancellation. How to cancel, methods of cancellation, consequence for not complying with customers' requests on cancellation, notification of rights of customers utilizing gym services, and of course, you know, making sure the AGs have full authority, even more so to intervene regarding mistreatment of customers by gyms. So, you know, we've greatly expanded the requirement for consumer awareness, and also put limitations on how they can take your money and even expanded the refund period. I mean, you know, I know there's like 1 month free trials and stuff with some gyms, but not every gym does that. Smaller gyms will, you know, give you like a 2-day trial. You know, we extend that to a week plus. So that gives people at least more of a chance because they're not going to the gym every day. I mean, most folks, you know, do alternation. I'm a big believer of workout one day, rest one day, workout next day. So you may find the gym uncomfortable, don't want to use it. You want to be able to have cancellation, but there's an inconsistent policy throughout the system on cancellation, which we're going to be more consistent by giving people more time. Originally, it's like a 2-day period. We're going to try to, we definitely expand that. And of course, we don't prohibit 1 month trials. I mean, gyms can still do that. One curious one is things like disability. If you're severely injured and unable to utilize the gym, we make that available as a reason to not continue to using the gym.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Good to know. Okay.
Yeah. Just because you're physically unable to use the gym does not void the contract.
Okay. Very good. That's good to know. I hadn't heard that provision, and that makes a lot of sense too.
Yeah. And also death. I mean, you got to stop charging people when you're dead. You know, so, you know, these are very, we perceive as very common sense issues. On this, I suspect some of the other members, once we make it through the process and hopefully get to the floor, I mean, I'm sure other members will file amendments of ideas. As always, you know, as chair of a committee, I'll entertain anybody's idea, and it seems to have merit. You know, obviously, I'll adopt the idea and never close to that. But, you know, right now, you know, we've expressed an interest to the Speaker's office saying, hey, you know, Mr. Speaker, this is a great consumer issue. It is a legit issue, but COVID is definitely reviewed a lot of the practices that actually some of us never really knew about.
That's right. Yeah. So some good has come out of it, I guess, at least greater awareness for sure. Anything else you're excited about this session, Tacky?
Well, we're, you know, my budget meeting's in about 3 weeks. So, you know, we're getting to that stage. And I'll be honest with you too. I mean, I haven't exactly seen where all my bills have popped out of committee or not popped out of committee yet. It's one of those funny things where, you know, all of us are still using the same computer system to get the updates. So it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, I kind of know, but I still have to chase the information like everybody else does. And it's a little more complicated than it sounds when you got like 4,000 plus bills popping out in the same day.
I am sure. Yeah. And you only have, like you said, 5 staff members to help you. So it's going to take a while. Yeah.
It's going to take a while because people are calling us trying to sort out what happened in their bills too. So it's a little bit involved, people. If you want like some strange idea that the computer system sends us notifications, I mean, we're not that sophisticated.
Yeah, there's no magic.
We don't have that sophisticated computer system. I'm sorry to tell you that. It's not like, oh, you know, here's an email notice telling what happened. No, we have to still chase all that information out ourselves. So, you know, between doing that, constituent services, you know, prime and next of committee bills, you know, try to prepare for next set of public hearings because I do get bills filed after the joint lieutenant's late files. You know, we're trying to work out that schedule. And we're still processing some bills that we need more time on, particularly people's home petitions on that stuff. But, you know, we're very excited that T-bond, transportation bond's coming. There's an economic development bond. There's a capital bond bill. I know it's all money stuff, but it's the second half of a 2-year cycle. We got to get this done before July 31st. And then I'm not sure what else is coming down the pike. I'll know more as we kind of move through caucuses to see the speaker's prioritization. So, you know, I wouldn't say I'm excited for any particular issues coming up. It's now up to scheduling.
Okay. Yeah. Time is of the essence for sure. The race for governor is changing again. Another candidate has stopped her campaign. Danielle Allen has pulled out.
Not surprised. I mean, I talked to Danielle Allen a couple of times. Very pleasant, had very good conversations, but a very new person to come into politics. And she, you know, did remarkably well raising money. The problem is that she has challenges raising more because, of course, everyone tends to lean towards the front runner on fundraising, and she's still relatively politically unknown. You know, trying to campaign during COVID period is tough, as we've seen in caucuses. In Quincy, we still did virtually, you know, doing videos and say hellos. And some point, the math is on the wall that, you know, what your budget for a campaign look like and your outreach and your ability to get delegates to vote for you at the convention to get you on the ballot is looking pretty poor. So that leaves just Sonia Chang-Diaz, you know, the senator from Jamaica Plain, still out there, but she is grossly underfunded compared to Maura Healey. And you can see me do this a few times. I keep calling Maura Martha from last time out because M's mess me up, folks. So don't be surprised they start doing that every so often. But Maura Healey, you know, clear fundraiser, has the infrastructure already in place statewide, you know, has the financial capacity. And this may be the first time in a very long time we're going to have a non-contested Democrat primary in a situation where there's an open seat. We've seen a minimal contest primaries against incumbent Republican governors. Roosevelt comes to mind, Gonzalez last time, but in the open seat situation, it's generally like for a blood sport in the Democratic primary. We may be avoiding that this time, which would be very remarkable in Massachusetts.
Yeah, it is indeed. Speaking of the primary, I know that the supplemental budget the governor signed includes September 6th, officially now is the primary election date.
Yeah, if you're a Democrat or unenrolled, you can vote for a Democrat primary. If you're a Republican or unenrolled, you can vote for a Republican primary come up in September. Early voting and all that fun stuff. You know, we're working on in the budget regarding mail-in vote. I mean, not budget, on other bill regarding mail-in voting or not. You keep asking about that. I don't know what's going on. But we already have existing law regarding things like early voting and things like that. That's already in books anyway. So, you know, the city and town clerks all know how this process works. It's been running smoothly for several years now, and I suspect it runs smoothly again. So the other details about mail-in voting and changing data registration and things like that, still in conference committee, but all the stuff you all been doing prior to COVID, still in the books. So, you know, like I said, the city and town clerks have done a wonderful job on mastering what we have now. And they've done a good job of mail-in voting for 2 years now. And I do expect we'll have mail-in voting in some form, and the you know, city and town clerks are ready to go. So yeah, nomination papers came out on Monday the 14th, Valentine's Day. And, you know, people are able to get off and start running campaigns. We actually have another departure coming up. Joe Wagner, the second leader from Chicopee, has decided not to run for re-election. He's been in the legislature over 30 years. That is another departure of someone that has enormous wisdom and skill and intelligence about public policy on a very wide range of issues, as well as a member of Speaker's leadership team that provides a steady hand of operating the State House. So he's not running for re-election for next year, so he's going to be around. But, I mean, we've already had Claire Cloney, majority leader, leave. She had a very rapid rise to majority leader inside of 10 years. You know, we lost a chair in Lori Ehrlich. She is the new FEMA regional director. She took the job this month, as well as Carolyn Dykema, who runs Natural Resources and Agriculture. She has now moved on to a solar company. Linda DeCamo has announced she's not running for re-election in next cycle. She'll be around to end of the year, and she oversees the cybersecurity committee. And we're not done yet. There'll be other people looking for run for offices. My classmate Paul Marcus running for state senate. The new elected kid from Ludlow, Jake Oliveira, has pulled the trigger for state senate in the open seat out there. Nika Aguado's announced for Sonia Chandia's seat in Jamaica Plain. Same thing of Liz Miranda. Folks, you know, there'll be more coming. Tim Whalen, Republican from down in the Cape area, is running for sheriff. Brad Hillary left us for the Gaming Commission. It looks like we're losing Sheila Harrington from Groton. She looks like she's going to be appointed to a court position. That we're just waiting for that formal announcement to happen on pushing the name forward to Governor's Council. So, you know, change is in the air, and there'll be more change coming.
But not here in Quincy. The delegation, including yourself, is back on the ballot.
Yes, I'll be working getting my signatures. The speaker is definitely running again, folks. He made the announcement back in the fall. For the benefit of our city, we would like to keep the speaker around as long as possible. And our good colleague, Bruce Ayers, has also run for election, and John Keenan. I am still the junior member of this group, believe it or not, somehow.
You young whippersnapper, you.
I am the kid still with the delegation, despite being here for 11 years at this point.
Wow. Yeah.
And to my knowledge, all my colleagues in the surrounding area, Mark Cusack got elected for me. He's run for election, as well as Jamie Murphy from Weymouth. Bill Driscoll is a relative newcomer. He chairs the COVID-19 committee, and Cusack chairs revenue, and Jamie Murphy chairs financial services. And Bruce Sears is the vice chair of financial services. So, again, it is in our best interest regionally to keep leadership people around with the speaker. It only benefits the constituents.
Sure. A little short on time today, Tacky, but I did want to mention the Quincy Asian Resources virtual Lunar New Year celebration coming up on Sunday, February the 20th. I know you'll be providing a message there. Can you give us a little preview?
Not much. It's it seems like I'm doing a lot of these videos. Just wishing everyone a happy year of the tiger. And obviously, you know, we can get together again at some point and enjoy the full festivities of the event, you know, saying hi to folks, you know, watching the live performances and enjoying food and seeing all the different vendors and whatnot. And also the hard work of the high school kids, North and Quincy High, are putting this festival together. They had to shift gears and made care packages for senior housing in particular. You know, reminded that they're not forgotten as part of the Lunar New Year. Isolation is a big issue, as everyone's discovered, especially in the senior population, which are higher risk of catching COVID-19. It's a great job by Quincy Aid Resources and the volunteers there to organize these care packages. It means a lot to folks. So even though we can't do something conventionally, you know, community service continues to be here and provide a way for folks to remember and not be forgotten.
Yeah, I want to remind folks you can watch that celebration here on QATV, also through our social media, and of course, through Corey's social media and website as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it'll be on repeat on QATV, which we're very, you know, happy and thankful they do the repeats. And it's, again, cultural celebration they can enjoy from home. But it's still not the same being in person. And as I've said in other interviews on other media outlets, I mean, Chinatown is very subdued. They had a lion dance on Saturday in the snow. I mean, Sunday in the snow, a 24-hour snowstorm that none of us expected. But I mean, the conventional Chinese New Year banquets have pretty much been canceled. And there's a huge financial hit from a lot of not-for-profit Asian organizations, particularly Chinese ones, because Lunar New Year's in Chinatown is obviously Chinatown Lunar New Year, right? Chinese organizations have taken a monster financial hit. And the House Asian Caucus and the legislature was able to appropriate $1 million in Mass Cultural Council money. The applications are currently open for Asian performance cultural groups who have been impacted by COVID because of the inability to do these cultural events as part of the making money. Part of celebrating opening of businesses actually involves a lion dance and performers. A lot of businesses do that as part of good luck and warding off bad spirits, as you know, pursuant to tradition. You know, if you're a Asian performance group that's listening right now, please do visit the Mass Cultural Council website to find out if you qualify to apply. Applications are open. They're going to close March 23rd, and they're going to do disbursements in the April month. And we would like to, you know, get this money out to folks before the close of the fiscal cycle.
Okay, good to know. Absolutely. We'll get that website up on the screen for folks to see. Speaking of, how do they get a hold of you, Tacky?
Same old, 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. You know, if you can't get anybody, hit a button. You know, we'll have skeletal staff starting next week. If there is a lot of phone calls, obviously, it's going to go to voicemail because you can't be answering the phone twice in one time. Some degrees of common sense on that front. You can email me at tacky.chan@mhouse.gov, tacky.chan@mhouse.gov. I do read all your emails, believe it or not. We do prioritize constituent service calls over all calls that come to my office. So all of you be aware that we prioritize constituent services first at all times. But people's testimonies and opinions regarding public policy, I do hear them. So I'm aware of it. And of course, Tacky Chan Facebook page, Representative Tacky, State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook page. We do post some useful information as well as my Twitter account at Tacky Chan. And of course, TackyChan.org is slowly but steadily being updated by the staff. So, you know, we'll have that out there. So plenty of resources without talking to me. You can try to find stuff. But if you feel the need to drop me a note, I will read it. That is most definite. But again, folks, I do prioritize constituent services first.
Okay, good to know. Maybe next time we Zoom, it'll be from your State House office.
Oh, yes. Let's see how the wireless internet goes in the State House. Okay. We're a brick, concrete, granite, steel, mishmash building. I think Wi-Fi in the State House is an interesting experience.
Maybe back in your car in the parking lot then.
that may actually be happening. I might get a better 5G signal than the State House signal. Actually, that is an interesting thing too, because we use wired LANs through the whole building. So we need to convert everything to docking stations and LAN up from there as opposed to putting stress on a Wi-Fi.
Sure.
So that's part of our technology change. And people are like, well, what took you so long? Well, have you guys seen the supply chain and technology? It's, yeah, we have this, we have a procurement process and everything else, just like state government and other businesses. So we have the same problem on upgrades. So we fully anticipate more hiccups as we go along regarding technology as we move through the gradual reopening.
All right. Good to talk to you as always. Appreciate it, Tacky.
You all take care, and I'll see you maybe in 2 weeks. I'm supposed to take next week off. We'll see how successful I really am, because every time I say that, I end up working anyway.
Okay. Hopefully, I haven't jinxed you. And
All
if I don't, have a wonderful time off, and we'll catch up soon.
we definitely will. See you then.